둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Kentucky, wow, that's quite a long way to Berlin.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network, thanks as always for making your way here and checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. New ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, Audible and Red Circle, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Marion Gold of the band Alphaville. They've just released a brand new symphonic album called Eternally Yours that collects a lot of their older catalog songs, plus one new one, and gives it the orchestration treatment. So we're going to be talking about how classical radio of his youth led him to synthesizers in the 80s, the process of turning their pop songs into these dreamy pieces. Marion's also going to dive into his lifelong love of space exploration, talk about how drugs influenced literature and music, and writing around the universe for his father, who was a pilot in World War II. We're also going to talk about him leaning on Shakespeare's sonnets for inspiration in regards to the title track, Eternally Yours, which he also says, get this, is an answer to their 80s hit Forever Young. And we'll hear about the plans for the next record that currently has the working title of Thunder Baby. I sure do hope that ends up being the real title. So let's get into this. We're talking Eternally Yours. It's Kyle Meredith with Alphaville's Marion Gold.
Hey, how are you?
It's great to see you. It's great to hear this new record. This is a symphonic record that you've done. Yeah. And first off, it's just so fun hearing the songs in this kind of nature. What made this project come into existence for you?
Well, you described it very well. That was exactly the idea about it, to turn the song into something completely different by not just standing in front of a tapestry of violins, you know, and playing in the old way, but you know, taking the orchestra as the main spectacle of the production, it's just one of the most fantastic devices, and it's very, very complex, and it is like, you know, you're taking the songs and bringing them into a different sphere, into a different universe, and that means that the result, by putting them in that symphonic area, just with an orchestra, without the band. The band didn't add not very much, just really a few little things, because we wanted to see what the orchestra would do with the songs, because we were so curious about the outcome and about the results of it. And it was just a fantastic adventure. And right from the beginning, we thought it would be also great to share it with our fans and our listeners, you know, and That was the main point of the whole enterprise.
Well, it does give you the, well, I should ask, you know, does it give you the opportunity to take these songs like someplace new? Because one thing there's putting the orchestra on them, but do you also take that opportunity to say, you know what, we could really transform this in some special ways?
Yeah, I mean, it is naturally it's a challenge. Also, because the production as such, you know, was a completely different thing. Normally, we go as a band in the studio, we think about songs we compose and throwing ideas at each other, and then we just record and play everything. And this time, I mean, there was the orchestra. There were librettists and people who wrote the notations for each and every instrument inside the orchestra. There was the conductor. The whole technical environment is a complete different thing from what we are normally used to. And we were basically, we felt like film directors, you know, and we had direct all these actors, all these different aspects of the production, like probably about 100 people, you know, who were involved in this. If you add everybody into this account, and then it was also kind of a wishing well, you know. We just said, okay, we would like to have this song it's an up-tempo song, but we would like to have it as a ballad, and it should be a waltz, and then we came up with arrangement ideas, and we had these two fantastic arrangers, Christian Lohr and Max Knoth, and they were the professional. In a professional way, they could transfer these ideas from our side here into notations and communicate with the orchestra. And it was, the whole process was very, very different and very interesting. And I learned also, we all learned a lot about this. I think we can take a lot out of this production and put it into future ones, because we learned so much about how different instruments can be used, you know, and in how many different aspects they can be used, and what each instrument has really a soul. I mean, especially these non-electronic instruments, you know, that the violins, the violas, the trumpets, the oboes, or whatever, you know, it's just a complete different universe of sound.
Isn't that interesting? You know, 40 years into it, and you're still finding new things about these instruments.
It is exactly what you say. I mean, this is the fantastic thing about music at all. You know, that it's a wide field, and it has it contains lots of unexpected things. Still, I mean, you can be in there for 100 years, and it will be still the same. You know, it's just wonderful to be a musician.
Well, there was something you said in the press release. You said, you know, doing the songs like this, their true nature has been revealed. What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, if you compose a song, there's you put a lot of your inner self and a lot of soul from yourself into it. And when I was a little boy, I was totally fascinated. We had a big kind of big sound machine, you know, with tubes and a big radio with this magic green eye. And as a 6-year-old, I was absolutely into this radio thing. It was like a big, huge cask. And you could travel via the wavelengths, you know, to really strange sounds, you know, but it had all these sounds, and then suddenly it was blah 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 blah, and then suddenly somebody spoke in a different language, in Russian or English or French or whatever. It was absolutely fantastic. That was one thing, and the other thing was that there was at that time there were a lot of classical music playing on the radio. I mean, the radios didn't play in Europe. They didn't play very much like pop songs or rock and roll songs or whatever. It was basically classical music. And I was very much into Chopin, and without knowing the name, you know, but I was just listening. And later on, when I was older, you know, I found out, okay, this is Chopin, this is Mozart. And I was completely taken by this wonderful music. And I was so much into it, you know. Sometimes I sat in front of the radio and I was crying while listening to Mozart, for instance. You know, and my mother then said, "I won't allow you to listen. Carry on listening to this music. This is not good music." It was in the bit. It was a little bit like later on when my father said, "You're not listening to rock and roll music." My mother was, "You're not listening to classical music. It's not good for you." So I think these two sides, the synthesized sounds, you know, it came through the wavelengths by traveling through them, you know, was one side of my or the beginning of my musical ideas, and the other side was this classical music. And when later on, when we from 1982 or 3, when we started composing our own music, I was probably still influenced by these things. And so the very core of many songs from Alphaville is actually very, very close to symphonic music. I mean, if you take a song like "Lassie Come Home," for instance, or "Forever Young," you know, these songs are very easily transcribed into symphonic music. And there's a lot more material, Alphaville material. And we collected all this material and put it on the album, and and did it in that way. And it was not a big task to do that. It was just the difficult thing was to make decisions, you know, in which direction we should go. But the idea as such was a very easy task.
It is interesting, and I think that probably goes along with a lot of your peers that also came from that similar era, because, you know, there have been some other artists who have done the symphonic thing, and it seems like it just easily lends itself, as you're talking about, you know. And maybe it is that synthesizer, but I feel like maybe you all were raised sort of in the same ways, as you were saying, with that classical side. I
Very,
mean,
very close. I think since the musicians that work a lot with synthesize and synthesize music are probably quite influenced by classical music, if they know it or not, it doesn't matter. But there's one important thing. You said the you know, turning pop songs or rock songs into classical pieces is not a very new idea, and you are absolutely right. But what we tried to do was, I mean, we took this idea, but we tried to do something really different with it. We really wanted the orchestra playing that. Not the band should not be involved. That was the law. N none of us would. I mean, we did a few overdubs with drums, just a few, and there's a sequencer running alongside Sounds Like Melody. But it was basically the orchestra, because that would mean that we had the greatest changes with all the songs included in this, and that was what we wanted to achieve. We wanted the song sounding as if they had been written in the 19th century and then played by an orchestra. Although, I mean, I know the way music was composed in these times was a completely different thing, but you know what I mean. You know that, so that these songs somehow sound authentic, you know, as if written in the 19th century of another of a parallel universe or whatever.
Well, I tell you, and opening it up, I mean, you've got right from the beginning, we hear Dream Machine, you know, which is a great track anyway, you know, sort of, I guess you call it deeper cuts in your catalog. Did you, was there intention of putting that as the opening track? How does that speak for the rest of the record that, you know, that the listener is about to hear?
When we put the music together, we were thinking about what kind of red line we could follow, and we thought, okay, we construct the album as if it was a public appearance, you know, in a public group in front of an audience. And then we came up with the idea that this first track would be absolutely perfect, because it comes out of nowhere, you know, it comes out of nowhere. And the idea then was, okay, in the demo version there were like synthesized sounds and noises, all these things. How can we achieve this with an orchestra? We're using all the instruments of the orchestra in a different way, in a way that these instruments were not meant to work. So in the beginning you hear this strange sound, like, and it's all the instrumentalists of the orchestra, they hit their instruments with their bows, you know? So it's just this fluttering kind of strange sound that comes out. And then you suddenly hear the first little sounds coming in. So it's really a great intro, you know, that, and Dream Machine is, from its title, you know, it is like a machine that creates dreams, or in one way, you know, turns dreams into reality, you know, and that is, so there's these two ideas were behind the decision that we thought that Dream Machine would be a perfect track as an opener for this project.
It's so imaginative, the idea of a machine that makes dreams. And that's what I've always loved about your songwriting, is the imagination that goes into, you know, whether it's space exploration. I mean, I know that's sort of played a big part. We were talking before the intro here, and you showed me you got a rocket ship next to you. And
that's from Hergé, from Tim, as in German. It's a comic series called Tim und Struppi, and it's about a kind of detective, and he has a little dog, and they also exploring the moon with this thing. You know, I got it from my daughter as a Christmas present last Christmas.
Yeah, but when you show me that, I wasn't surprised, that, you know, because you have a song called Apollo, you know, from the 90s, and just on and on and on. What was it about space that drew you? You know, I'm surrounded by Bowie pictures back here. I'm a big Bowie fan too. So, you know, space was always a big part of his songwriting. Right. What was it for you?
As a space exploration, all the ideas about what, you know, what you read when you read science fiction or science with Ray Bradbury over, we have like a comic hero in Germany. His name is Perry Rhodan. You know, I grew up with these comics when I was a little boy. And I was always fascinated in strange things, in bizarre things, and what could be more bizarre, you know, to enter different universes, different planets, different civilizations, where your fantasy would just fly and just could go wherever it desires, you know. It just frees your mind from lots of unnecessary loads when you enter these spaces. And I mean, as long as you can return, you know, not like Major Tom, he doesn't return. And another thing is, you know, is that, so for instance, drug consumption is very similar to that. It's a chemical parallel, you know, to what, you know, it can expand your mind, and all these things. I mean, also in science fiction literature, like Neuromancer, what they play a really important role. Drugs on one side, fantasy on the other side, technology on the third side, if there are third sides, and whatever. So, I mean, all these kind of combinations were just really interesting from the very beginning for me. I mean, even when I was like 10, 11 years old, I was starting, you know, thinking about all these things. And then you naturally, you drift into a place that is the hemisphere of artists or of art. It's so logical, you know. So I mean, there was simply no other choice for me than to become an artist, because I had all these crazy ideas in my mind, and otherwise I would have probably gone mad. Yeah, I have.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Save big money on your next upgrade now at Menards. Some things never go out of style, like tile from Mohawk. You can count on the durability, easy maintenance, and timeless beauty of tile. With over 350 ceramic, porcelain, mosaic, and glass tiles to choose from, Mohawk Tile provides long-lasting charm in any space. Visit the store and Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on in our weekly flyer. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Marion Gold of Alphaville. You know, I noticed that mode, that inspiration has stuck with you. I mean, we only head back to your previous record a few years ago, and you've got the song Around the Universe, which is also incorporated in this new set. With the new, the latest news of space exploration, what we're able to see with this new telescope, do you find that that's still influencing whatever you're writing these days?
I don't know. I mean, I'm very much interested in, you know, what's happening with these new telescopes that they just shot up into the sky, and the Hubble telescope, and I'm very much interested in all these things. Have you watched For All Mankind, this TV series?
No, I haven't seen that.
Is it on Netflix or on Amazon? I don't know. It's just absolutely fantastic. It is a story. It's a parallel reality thing, you know. So it starts with the space exploration in the early 60s, and so it just, you know, runs alongside the history that we know, but in 1968 or so, it's not the Americans that landed on the moon, but the Russians that won the war, this space thing. And so it goes on and on into the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and some things are exactly the same, and some others are completely different. And it's absolutely, I can only recommend that. This is really fantastic. And it's in a way also a kind of science fiction thing, you know, because in the 90s, then they go to Mars and there's another space race then on. And it's really interesting. It's like three. I saw the last sequence of this series, and it's very, very good.
I guess I know what I'm watching this weekend. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Great actors also. Really, really good. Really good. Well made.
Well, you know, I brought up Around the Universe, and that coming from just a few years ago. And again, as I mentioned, that's on this this new set with Eternally Yours. You know, with a song so new versus all of your older songs, did you approach that one in the same way? Because, you know, it felt to me like that one's still fresh. You know, you had just laid that one down not long ago. Like how did you approach that one?
For me, these songs, I do not see them in like different levels, that this song is old, this song is new or whatever. They become very, very present. Like when, for instance, when we play them live, you know, then they're all on the same timeline. And we're talking about like a song Around the Universe. There is actually a very personal song because it's a song about my father, and about two different persons that both represent myself. You know, me as a young boy and me as an adult. And I wrote this song after my father had died. And he was a pilot in the Second World War, and when I was a little boy, I found under the roof of our house there was a kind of big cask, and I found photographs of him, you know, in this uniform and sitting in one of these fighter planes, and I was a little boy and tried to ask him about it. He would not talk. I mean, he never talked about the war. When shortly before he died, he told me a few stories about this, but he never talked very much about that. So I had this photograph in my hand, and then when my father died, I remembered this thing, you know, and I wondered, you know, that maybe he's now on another voyage, on another travel. And he was fighting in the war and came back and created me, you know. Now he's gone forever, and I wondered, you know, is there probably somebody who has a photograph of mine in his hands, you know. I wondered who this person would probably be or whatever. And this was what I really put into the lyrics, what I tried to express with the lyrics, without attempting making everybody understand these lyrics. I mean, they were just for me words, you know, that I could sing and that would really in a way inspire me, you know, while I'm singing. Because when you're singing, you put all these feeling into your voice, and then you tell much more, the story becomes much bigger when you sing it, and you need the right words for that. So it has to do with the universe and all these things. It has a lot of cosmic aspects, but from a complete, probably different perspective, you know, like people probably might think.
It's a beautiful sentiment, though. I mean, just the way you come through on that, and I will say it's beautifully orchestrated. And you know, throughout all it, and I should quickly bring up, there is a new song on here too. It's the title track. What can you tell me about that one? Because there's always that, okay, we're going to write a new song. There's going to be something, you know, something to bring you in.
Yeah, this is the only new song that we wrote for this album. We thought that we had to write one new song that accomplishes somehow the structure, or that, you know, sets it, you know, that as a kind of, in, you know, that surrounds the idea of the album, the title track. So we knew that the title of the album would be Eternally Yours. And it was the first time in my life that I wrote a song just starting with the title, not with a line or with a verse, or so, with no idea. There was just this Eternally Yours, which is like the ending of a love letter or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was quite interesting. And I actually was unable to write any lyrics for it. So I'm a great William Shakespeare reader and admirer. And I think I have no words to describe this guy. So I won't do it. And I read through his sonnets and put some of these lines together to express the situation of an aged artist, which is actually me, and actually William Shakespeare wrote a lot about aged artists or aged people, and it is a dialogue between the artist and the muse, you know, his muse, which can be anything. It can be an idea, or it can be a woman in flesh and blood, or whatever. It doesn't matter for this song. It's just that the artist, in the end, in this song, with the words of William Shakespeare, says, "I may be old, but I'm not too old that I could not talk, anymore with my muse. The muse is still there and gives me inspiration, and I can still create things." And this is that is the content that I drew out of the sonnets of William Shakespeare. And I rearranged the verses a little bit, and the result then was the song. And then we had the lyrics, and then the next big step was, okay, and now the music. and that was probably, that was really interesting, because the other songs, when we wrote the other songs, we were not thinking about symphonic interpretations or whatever. But this song, right from the start, was from its idea, it had to be a symphonic thing, and that was it. In a way, it opened the door for us, you know, to get ourselves right into this production. You know, by writing this song, it was like the keyhole, and we turned the key by creating this song, and then went into this production.
It's got these movements in it. I mean, it seemed like you all really, I don't know, maybe had a lot of fun kind of figuring out all those puzzle pieces.
Yeah, yeah, we threw really lots of ideas at each other, you know. I mean, there are lots of different pieces that represent members from the band, and we're all inside the song. I mean, it's much more than in other songs. In other songs, it's more like that we streamline, in a way, we're running in parallel lines, you know, through a production, you know, but with this song, we just collided, you know, from all sides.
You know, with the track, I mean, called Eternally Yours, and talking about an older artist, is there any intentional callback to a moment like Forever Young? I mean, do you take those moments on this record?
Yeah. This Eternally Yours is, in a way, the answer to Forever Young, if there's any answer possible for this song, because I will never understand what this song finally tells or expresses. You know, it's a complete riddle to me. I mean, I'm talking about Forever Young, because the wonder about this song is that it seems to have an elementary command to any situation in life. I mean, people listening to this song when they on a wedding, on a funeral, on a birthday, on so many contradictory occasions, and to each of these situations, the song has an answer, a kind of command. And I mean, I've written this song together with Bernard and Frank almost 40 years ago. But so people probably think, oh, these guys knew what they were doing. No, we didn't know what we were doing when we wrote this song. For some reason, we got everything right for the song. But I mean, I have really no explanation why. It was not intentional.
Some of those songs, they just got that magic dust on them, and that's one of them. I feel it too. I feel it too whenever I listen to it, and I do that with a lot of your songs that you've written through the years. So you sort of mentioned it, and I'll close out with this. Taking what you've learned from Eternally Yours, from this project, how is that influencing? Are you writing new music now that you're finding out goes along with these concepts?
Yeah, well, there's one really serious problem about this production of Eternally Yours, and that is that it takes so long. Normally, you know, you write an album, you record the album, then it will be it's released, and then you have some, you do some promo, you do a couple of concerts, and that's it then. So it's basically 1 year, 1.5 year maybe what you need. This production goes on and on. I mean, we started in the middle of 2021, you know, with this, and finished the recording in the beginning of 2022. And now the album will be released this month, finally. It goes up to Christmas, you know. Then the next year we have the tour that starts in Europe. And hopefully we also come to the United States in springtime 2023, you know, and that goes on and on to the middle of maybe even in fall 23 or whatever. So there's really a long, long time. And we're already working on the next album that has a working title, Thunder Baby, it's called. Yeah, Alphabet is famous for a really strange title.
Oh, I love that. I love it.
And we also have written quite a lot of material, which is before the actual production of Eternally Yours. And this material is very, very electronically. It's really a look back into the beginnings of the history of Alphaville in a way. There's lots of electronics, lots of sequencers and drum machines and all these things involved. And I don't know. I mean, because we did this production now, we are in different territory. So we're just sitting there and wondering what shall we do with this material. We must overdub, or we must do something with it, something completely different what we originally intended to do. Maybe we do this with the second next album, what we tried to do with Thunder Baby, because we're in such a different territory from our mindset at the moment that we cannot carry on the production as we originally planned. And so in a way, it's good that Eternally Yours gives us some time to reorientate and think about what we're going to do with the baby. And it will also probably for us a complete surprise when we finish the production what it is, if you compare it to the original idea from the beginning. So, but whatever it is, I am looking very, very much for, I mean, I'm so happy whenever we manage to go back into the studio between all the concerts and all these promotion activities for Eternally Yours and working on Thunder Baby, because this is it's really a great enterprise, and it will be again a very, very different album from the one before, but it will contain lots of experiences that we can draw out of Eternally Yours, of the production of Eternally Yours.
Well, I'll be looking forward to hearing that one just as much as I love hearing all the work that you all put out. But in the meantime, Marian, Eternally Yours, it is such a fun adventure that you all have made with these songs. So
thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for doing the music, and thank you for taking the time to talk about it today.
All right. It was a pleasure to talk to you. All the best.
And my thanks to Marian Gold. Alphaville, the brand new album is called Eternally Yours. Thanks to you as well for hanging out, checking out the episode. hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. 3 new interviews a week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at all the usual podcast places. That also includes YouTube for the video versions. Then after that, you can head over to WFPK.org. To write to a show, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also catch me on the social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them, at Kyle Meredith is the address. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
What is this little radio device there? That is really sweet.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.